Cole.
And welcome. I believe that we are archiving, so we're going to go ahead and start episode Circular Progress. I am Alex, your leftist.
And I am Paul, your crazy conservative.
Crazy conservative. So, there's a lot of news going on recently. I just closed my window. But I guess what we're going to get into first is the Palestine-Israeli issue. There's some news that's been made recently, actually. Hamas and Fatah are holding meetings in Cairo, Egypt, all this month to try to attempt and form a type of unity government. It's actually over a dozen Palestinian groups, but of course Hamas and Fatah being the major ones. And they're calling for unity government, new elections, release of prisoners, and they agreed not to criticize each other in the media as a show of solidarity. And combined with the recent elections in Israel that are still in the process of unfolding, what do you think, Paul? Do you think this is good signs for peace or not much? You don't hold too much stock in it.
Well, I'd like to hope that any form of a coalition or unity government would be preferable to a really radical government, or which, I mean, let's be honest, that's basically what we're talking about in Palestine right now. So I think a unity government, if they're really trying to move past their differences and improve relations both amongst themselves, especially, and Israel, I think that's a step in the right direction.
Right. Yeah, I find it to be pretty interesting. I think that a lot of people were taking their attention away from this region, especially with the new administration and the election of Netanyahu. don't take my pronunciation offensively.
I think I was actually right.
Right, thank you. But yeah, especially with him and his kind of inflammatory rhetoric, I believe he rejects a two-state solution. I don't know what solution he supports, but. But I feel like at least on the Palestinian side, this will be good, because one of the major things that that kept Palestine down, I would say, is a lack of a unified negotiating front and internal divisions. But we'll see how much it actually does, because you know the Western backed Fatah party has become synonymous with corruption and ineptitude in Palestine. So if some type of coalition government does form, let's see how equal it is actually. And I would still contend that the peace lies it's in the hands of the Israelis, pretty much. I would argue. You would probably disagree with me.
I think it depends. If we're talking about if this unity government is formed and they are actually for compromise, and they really want to find a solution that results in peace, and this two-state system. If they really want it, then I think the onus does shift to the Israelis to compromise.
I guess the major point of contention is what the compromises will be. Obviously, I think for Hamas or the Palestinians, it's fairly obvious that stopping rocket attacks on the Israeli settlements is theirs, but. I guess the question begs to stand, if Israel is willing to stop occupying Gaza in the West Bank. And I don't know how a newly elected prime minister elected to a right-wing party campaigning on, you know, Israeli supremacy and not giving an inch to the Palestinians. I don't really know how that'll work out.
Well, go ahead. I think the Israelis are going to have to accept eventually, if they're going to compromise, that yes, they do have a country, but the Palestinians were also there first.
Right.
And they also have a right to have a country. And I think that's one of the big things that's going to have to happen before there's any sort of real peace there.
Right, and a slightly troubling sign, I guess, is the settlements. Israeli human rights organization recently uncovered plans for about like 70,000 new settlements in the West Bank or something. So obviously that's not compatible with any type of peace, considering that settlements are one of the major points of contention. But I think that's pretty much it with the Palestine-Israel issue. We just have to wait and see pretty much who wants to compromise. The Obama administration response to it has been kind of, you know, the typical for U.S. administrations, of course, like we stand by Israel, blah, blah, blah. But Hillary Clinton, I guess, has been getting a little bit of flack for criticizing the Israeli settlements. Maybe this will usher in a new era of...
Was it she or the administration? Because I know to an extent she does speak for the administration.
Right.
Was it just her or the administration saying that she actually supports Palestine?
I believe it was her speaking on behalf of the administration. I know recently she's come out and said something about aid. Forgive me if I'm wrong, and I could be horribly wrong, but I vaguely remember reading like 80 million or something with an 80 in it.
I think it was actually more.
More?
But I think there was an 80 in it somewhere.
Yeah, I remember seeing an 80 in it, but of aid going directly to Gazans, but somehow not going through Hamas. If someone can tell me how we're going to do that, maybe via helicopter or a genie.
Yeah,
maybe,
that
Hamas
would be very interesting to see how they're going to pull that off.
Right.
One thing that I've found interesting, and this is a complete aside, I remember reading, I forget where, but sort of this very interesting point that Israelis, or some Jews, especially in New York, have been making, because when she was there, she was pro-Israel. Before that, she was pro-Palestine, and now
really?
It appears that she's pro-Palestine again. So I just thought that was interesting to note.
I would say it's a little bit of a stretch to call her pro-Palestine, but I understand what you mean. She has, prior to this, for example, I did not support her in the primaries because of her hawkish stance and how she generally supports Israel and her husband's legacy doing that. But I do get what you mean. She is becoming a diplomat, which is good to see, and it's good to see her exerting, I guess, her influence. Because a big criticism of the Obama administration so far has been all the envoys, and is Hillary Clinton just like a face there, an empty chair, or is she actually going to be doing major like things with major foreign policy implication? So I think overall they're doing a pretty good job being engaged, and we'll just see if maybe we can get a more equitable response to the Palestine-Israel crisis.
Yeah, well. Well, you know, I certainly don't agree with much of what Obama has done on the domestic side. I do think he's doing a good job on the foreign side. Because even I'll admit that under the Bush administration, we definitely pulled back in terms of relations with people we don't necessarily agree with. And I think with all these envoys that he's sending out, I think he's doing a good job of reestablishing us as, I don't know if I'd say an arbiter, but at least a player in
exactly.
Major international relations.
Right. I think that's a lesson that was well taken by those who consume politics in the United States, that despite what we heard over the last 8 years, diplomacy is not bad or a reward for doing what we want. It's something that you do with your enemies to avoid larger situations. So I hope we continue that. Continuing on the foreign policy vein, so I'm a bit of a foreign policy nerd. Next episode, you can pick the topics. I guess Obama has recently announced a drawdown in Iraq, leaving behind up to 50,000 residual forces, non-combat forces, quote unquote, in favor of upping our military presence in Central and Southern Asia in regards to Afghanistan and Pakistan. First, briefly, I just want to get your opinions on the Iraq drawdown and how you feel about that from a Republican perspective. Because I believe McCain supports the drawdown, so I was curious to see where others on the foreign policy right feel about this.
Well, first of all, don't take any of this as fact, because I have not been following the Afghanistan situation, or not, sorry, Iraq situation that closely, but there are always, probably always going to be some sort of car bombings or violence there.
Right.
I think, really, we've gotten the situation pretty well in hand, and I don't think keeping us there as a major force fighting for the Iraqis instead of their regular army, I don't see the ultimate use for that. So I think leaving the 50,000, I believe he said they were leaving them there to support, like, logistically train and stuff like that. Yeah. I think that is good to keep that, building them up as a to a modern fighting force.
Right. Yeah, I guess the issues on the left, at least according to all the blogs, is that the rather ambiguous nature of these troops left behind, and the idea of how can American troops be in Iraq and not be in combat? Like, I guess the idea is people don't really see this as an end to the war, just drawing down and trying to make a lower profile. But
well, I mean, think about it. Over here, we have active duty troops stationed at bases doing combat maneuvers and training. Right. They're not in combat. They're training. I think it's going to be somewhere there. They might run logistical operations or logistics on operations for the Iraqis, but I don't think they're going to strap on an M16 and go into combat. I think that's what we're going to see less of.
Right, and I think that'd be welcome. I think it's just the issue of our huge embassy there, which is the size of Vatican City, by the way. That strikes you as odd. It should. I believe it's the largest embassy in the world. But basically, the environment's not going to get any less hostile, but we're still going to have troops there. But to move on a little bit, you kind of touched on this a little bit, so I just want to kind of jump into this before we start talking about Afghanistan. It's been a debate going on a lot of the foreign policy blogs, I guess, counterinsurgency versus counterterror, and generally, the objectives, I guess, of our military interventions. So, moving on to that, I guess, do you think that we should be, I guess, from a modern conservative's viewpoint, counterinsurgency, i.e., like nation building, or nation building, other stuff like that, or counter-terror, which is more so like military, like what we were doing in Iraq prior, trying to conquer and kill the enemy, as opposed to counter-insurgency, which is using manpower instead of firepower, using public opinion of the nation that we're in, holding it in high regard, etc. So I just wanted to see what the modern conservative movement, I guess, is looking for out of our military.
Oh, I wouldn't call me necessarily representative of the modern conservative movement, but I think we need to do both.
Fair. Okay.
I think we do need to continue nation building, be it build up a political base for their government. Well, we wouldn't do that. They'd do that. But building up infrastructure and just continuing to really, like I said with Iraq, bring them into the modern world, because I don't think we can really dispute that. But before we went in there, they were really that modernized. I wouldn't call them really hugely backwards, but they definitely weren't a modern power.
Which would be Afghanistan or Iraq here?
I would argue both.
Both, okay.
And but also, I mean, I think we really, the basis we went in there on was on the basis of counterterrorism.
Counterterror.
Hunting down Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. So I think we need to do both. But I really don't think you can leave one enough without the other. We need to try and round up all the terrorists and really break the central arm of Al-Qaeda and their leadership. But at the same time, we can't just go in there and expect them to let us run all over their land. I mean, we need to also bring them back in, like I said, into the world.
Right. So just to get further into Afghanistan, I guess, I was researching this, I've come across a lot of information, I guess, about, I guess, who we're fighting over there, and I guess a big, I guess, misconception. There we go. About who it is that America is fighting over there. So I just want to read a short little excerpt, excuse me. There's no such thing as a Taliban today. Many different groups with different leaders and aims call themselves Taliban. In general terms, any group that calls itself Taliban is identifying against the U.S., against the government in Kabul, which they see as propped up by the United States, against the United States and against U.S. allies. And instead of fighting organized theocratic government forces and their foreign terrorist guests, we are now arrayed against a combination of actual foreign terrorists, actual Taliban fighters from either Afghanistan or Pakistan, narco warlords jockeying for regional power, regular warlords jockeying for regional power, and just plain old angry Afghan civilians who are angry about civilian casualties or just foreign forces and broken promises to the Taliban. And I guess a little bit more detail, I guess, what the U.S. refers to as the Taliban are actually five like distinct groups, which is the old Taliban of Mullah Omar, which is the one that we're all familiar with. Excuse me. And they're based in Pakistan currently. So basically it's a bunch of groups, I guess, over different areas, and that's the issue, is that no one really knows who we're fighting. So I guess my question is specifically, what do you hope to see in Afghanistan? I noticed you said you want to bring them a kind of modern government, but we have to realize that just from the description I just read and the history of Afghanistan, they never had a centralized top-down government. That's just not how their society is. So do you think that we should try to impose Western-style democracy, or should we just try to set up a loose federal government, kind of like the founders, I guess, wanted here, with more power to regional areas and a semi-powerful foreign government? I guess, for the sake of being specific, what exactly are we trying to accomplish in Europe?
Well, first, let me clarify. When I said bring them into the modern world, I don't even necessarily politically. I honestly think they should really be able to have what form of government that the people actually want. When I said modernizing, I was referring in terms of infrastructure, like roads, highways, and byways, buildings, and bridges, and things like that.
Which we're bombing right now. But continue. That was snarky and not fair.
No, it wasn't. Anyway, what was the question?
Just basically, specifically, I just wanted you to clarify a little bit by what you meant by modernizing. And I guess if I could say this.
Next question.
For a hypothetical, what should Afghanistan look like before we leave? You want modern infrastructure, presumably some type of strong government and power.
Strong government with popular support would be very nice.
Assuming that's possible.
Assuming that's possible, and also a good, well-trained military, because there's really, I don't see much point of us leaving them with nice roads, bridges, and buildings if they don't have the means and abilities to defend the roads, bridges, and buildings. I think it's a lot like Iraq. I don't think you're ever going to totally defeat insurgents or terrorists, because I mean, if you look in Pakistan, you may or may not be familiar with this. I only know about it because I follow cricket loosely. After the attacks in Mumbai, India canceled their cricket tour of Pakistan,
right.
And instead, Sri Lanka, this was actually earlier this week, was on their way to the stadium to play a test match, which is an exhibition game,
right.
And the convoy, actually, with the bus carrying the coaches and the one behind carrying the referees, was shot up. And
right, yeah,
by terrorists in the middle of the city. So, I mean, if you're never going to completely get rid of the terrorists in these countries because they're so deep-rooted. I mean, saying that we're going to totally defeat the terrorists and achieve a complete military victory over them, I think is quite frankly unrealistic. What I do think we need to really get them down as much as possible and get them to, they're not going to be controllable levels, but I'm trying to think of the best way to phrase it.
Just bring the violence down, I guess, to a police type endeavor instead of a military endeavor.
Yeah, basically. I mean, basically, so you don't have to have the military walking the streets day and night. Instead, you have localized events, which I would argue, I mean, you have localized events in America.
Right.
I mean, these are shootings. These aren't terrorist attacks, but these are police matters. You don't have to call the National Guard out when somebody gets shot in Baltimore City.
Right. It's very interesting. I mean, I agree with a lot of the essence of what you said. It's just, in my view, I don't think we're ever... I think we're going to have to make the hard choice, because I don't think there's ever going to be a day where we're going to look over at Afghanistan, and to be fair, Pakistan, because you can't talk about one without talking about the other. But I don't think there's a day we'll be able to look at that region and say everything is how we like it. I think we're going to have to, some president's going to have to make the unpopular decision, I guess, to the hawkish parts of our constituency. That we have to leave, because what we're doing right now, I guess, our offensive in Afghanistan is also recently has been destabilizing Pakistan, because Al-Qaeda, who we have to remember, is an outside group. Like, they're not part of the indigenous, like, Iraqis or Afghani people. They're an outside group. And what they've started doing, despite their loose affiliation with some elements of the Taliban, they're using their remaining resources to attack and destabilize Pakistan. And our stock in Pakistan isn't really popular, of course, because of supporting a military dictator who had lawyers rioting in the streets. I don't know if you remember that, but that's always a striking visual to me. Because that's one of the few times you see the oppressed being, you know, like people in suits and ties rioting on the streets. I'll always remember that for my whole life. But I guess what I'm trying to get at is I don't really see a military solution to Afghani-Pakistani problems. And a lot of foreign policy realists have been echoing this. And I guess one of the ideas that's being floated around is... working with Pakistan and co-opting people that may or may not be the enemy, because part of the Pakistani, I guess, the name escapes me right now, but they're a military force, I guess. Not all of them are loyal to Pakistan. A lot of them are loyal to Taliban or other warlords or Al-Qaeda. But one of the options, I guess, which is probably most feasible, is making a very strong alliance with the Pakistani military and intelligence officials. But of course, this in itself has its ups and downs, because we already have been working in Pakistan, but if we enhance working with them to try to go after... Well, first of all, how do you feel about that? How do you feel with, I guess, integrating military forces, working more closely with Pakistani forces to contain the Al-Qaeda and Taliban elements in Afghanistan?
Well, it depends on what you mean by that. If you mean we work closer with Pakistani intelligence and the military, and maybe carry out coordinated strikes in Pakistan after specific terrorist interests, and then come back out, that I would agree with that.
Well, are we doing that? Because I know we launch. Well, Pakistan.
Well, I think we're doing it, but they don't like it very much.
Well, I know they haven't liked it, and the Pakistani government has been trying to act like they weren't involved. But the most recent one, I guess, from last week or 2 weeks ago, it came out that, or who was it? I want to say Feinstein, Dianne Feinstein, or Pelosi, or somebody made a comment that showed that basically said the Pakistanis launch the drone missiles from their own bases at our behest, which I guess was a big break because no one knew that they that showed a greater level of cooperation, I guess, than people assumed was happening. So, but continue. Sorry, cut you off. But yeah, I think to a certain extent we're doing that. I guess what they're talking about is funneling more money and equipment into Pakistan and integrating our forces. I mean, I guess in terms of like geopolitically, this has its ups and downs, like anything in Afghanistan, which is why it's such a difficult problem. Because if we go it alone, we stand to destabilize Pakistan and create more terrorists. If we work with Pakistan, we could possibly destabilize the entire region because, of course, India, on the whole other side, doesn't want Pakistan getting powerful. Because of their issues in Kashmir and a whole bunch of other geopolitical issues. So it's kind of a damned if we do, damned if we don't, it seems like, in Afghanistan. Which is why, I mean, I would support us leaving, but I guess it's not a politically tenable situation for the Obama administration right now. Anything else to say in Afghanistan before we move on?
No, I think we've pretty much covered all our bases there. So
true. Next. We're going pretty fast. So let me just before we hop to the
that's what she said. Sorry.
That's actually the opposite of what she said, but we'll get back to that. Before we get to the future of the Republican Party, there's been a lot of stuff happening right now with the Truth Commission. And I want to know how you feel about that. The idea by. I guess Pat Leahy is the one who's putting his name on it, but a lot of Democratic senators especially are putting their support behind a independent truth commission to look into wrongdoing of the Bush administration. I wanted to see your thoughts, opinions, what you've heard from this, and how the right is taking it.
Well, I don't know how the right's taking it, but I think it's stupid.
Why's that?
Well, let's think about it. I don't think you'd disagree that some questionable things happened in the Clinton administration. And,
oh, no, I wouldn't disagree with that at all.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, but were Republicans calling for a truth commission when we got the White House and the Congress?
I was pretty young back then, I don't recall, but you guys did try to kick him out for getting a blowjob, so... For lesser, you try.
No,
to
have we kicked him out. Tried to kick him out for lying.
Lying about getting a blowjob. Okay, sorry, I was incorrect. But to my knowledge, no. Specifically, they were not trying to kick him out for national security. You know, possible law breaking.
Honestly, I think this is, and you can condemn me, mock me, whatever you want, because I know I'm going to get a lot of crap for this. I don't care. I think this is just an example of the far left going to the Democratic Party and taking over their agenda and basically just hijacking it and, you know, just doing whatever they want with it. I think it is just dumb, to be honest. That's really all I have to say about it.
But why? Like, do you think it's dumb because it takes our eye off present issues, or because you don't think that things like waterboarding and legal rendition are wrong? Or, like, for what reason is it stupid besides it's a Republican president who would be going after?
Well, besides being stupid on its own merit, yeah, it does divert our attention away from pressing and present issues before we're all really worried about taking care of the economy. Now we're going to set aside time from dealing with the economy and other actual issues because basically something happened in the last 8 years that we didn't like, and yeah, we're just gonna bring people in because we disagreed with them and try to get them in trouble.
Okay. I disagree with you in like infinite ways. So let me just I guess get to it. I think this is mostly an issue regardless of party, because I do not, although I'm very left wing, I guess, political views, however you want to classify it. I don't identify with the Democratic Party. I think I'm more left wing.
Well, yeah, you're further left than that.
Yeah, I'm further left than them. And people on the far left don't think that the Democratic Party serves our interests. We believe that they're pretty much the same version of the Republican Party, just they give better lip service to the poor. But this is showing this administration, I guess, it's exciting for me as someone who reads the leftist blogosphere to see that we have influence now. We were like you guys, I guess, in the wilderness in the Clinton years. You know, he didn't really listen to us, he didn't listen to us at all, really. And Bush didn't listen to us at all. But I think this is great for issues of congressional power and congressional oversight, because during the Bush administration, the Congress was just a little like a lapdog to whatever he said, you know, no oversight. And I would love to see this oversight on anyone. I think this should happen. I think it should happen on Obama for his for the illegal rendition he's continuing and keeping it going in Afghanistan and air bases there. I think that the fact that we are a nation of laws, built on our laws and statutes, and that's what's supposed to make us great. I think that even our president should be held accountable to that. And the fact that he was not forthcoming. It was not like he said, it's not like he addressed the nation and said, we started a rendition program, blah, 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 to help you guys. These were the warrantless wiretapping, illegal rendition, was all the CIA destroying 92 interrogation tapes, quote unquote, to protect the identity of their agents. Like, it's a lot of fishy business going on. And I feel like just for the sake of knowing, we have to know what we did so we can not do it again, do what we can to limit presidential power so any unitary executive, whether a Democrat, Republican, a Whig, whatever they are, that no one can do this again. So I would argue this is of the utmost importance, and I would applaud the senators that are doing this.
Well, no, hang on.
I'm hanging.
They had their chance at Bush. Now they're still mad because, you know,
when
they didn't
bother.
When
did they have their chance?
When did the Democrats take control of the House?
In 06.
Yeah.
Okay, but
six to the end of 08, if they were really that mad at what he was doing, they could have impeached him, but they didn't.
First of all, I would argue the Senate has greater powers of oversight.
Sorry, I was referring to Congress.
Congress as a whole. And I would agree with you. The Senate Democrats were soft under Bush, but now with greater majorities and a mandate from the people for two straight elections, gaining seats in the House, they have some type of ridiculous majority now. And in the Senate, they're almost at 60 senators themselves. Once Al Franken gets seated, that's what, 59? They only need one more. So, I mean, I think that now is the time to do it. And if Bush didn't break any laws, then there'll be no problem. This is simply an investigation to see if he broke laws. So I just don't understand, like, how Republicans can say with, like, a straight face, oh, we shouldn't investigate if he broke laws.
Look directly at me. I'm not saying we shouldn't have investigated if he broke laws while he was the president. If we really wanted to investigate what laws he broke, we should have investigated him while he was president. Because if what he was doing, according to people, was really that bad, they should have stopped him. And they did nothing. Well, they were completely spineless.
Well, that and the whole executive privilege, this is an issue of national security. For example, Nancy, I just posted this on my blog, Nancy Pelosi was on Rachel Maddow last week saying that they were briefed that the Bush Justice Department had questions whether we could warrant or wiretap civilians without a warrant, in she was against that, but because it was classified information, she could not come out publicly and state that. But now they're saying now they have, because the Justice Department is already doing an investigation, they simply want to establish a congressional version of that, I guess. And there's not even really cohesion on the Democratic side, whether we should have a special prosecutor now start prosecuting, whether we should have this commission, and whether this, because this commission seems like it's going to happen. It's going to go ahead. It's just a matter of if it has teeth or not, and if it offers immunity, which a lot of people on my side of the spectrum are strongly against giving immunity. But I just don't, like, it's torture, and spying on Americans and expanding presidential power to an embarrassingly create, like, I would at least think the presidential power argument would sway some Republicans, because you guys are all about states' rights and all that, and I am too, because I feel like pretty much since the start of our nation, the president has been growing in power. I think that's a problem. I think Congress should be the predominant branch, but that's enough about that. It's 1:30. I got to head out here in 15 minutes. So let's get into talking about the future of the Republican Party. It is hilarious for all of us to sit back and watch you guys self-destruct on TV on a daily basis. So I'll give you the opportunity, Paul. I want you to say something bad about Rush Limbaugh. Is he the leader of your party? Is he really that important to you guys?
Well, I don't necessarily agree with what Rush says, but he's right.
About?
Basically, the true conservatives, the Republican Party deserted its base, which is the conservatives, which is why we didn't get out to vote. I mean, nominating John McCain, that...
Well, I mean, you guys could have threw up Mitt Romney, but he was... I would argue he's not really that much better.
I don't like Mitt Romney either.
I guess the issue is you guys don't really seem to have a leadership or a voice as a party. I argued this when we were talking about the stimulus. Remember, there's not really alternatives. There's a lot of criticism for the Republicans, but there's no new ideas. Like, the Bush policies happened. They failed. I think everyone can agree that his policies were a failure. But at least the congressional Republicans, who I'm mostly speaking of, the congressional Republicans, not like Ann Coulter and all those other unimportant people, but they at least are not offering any new ideas besides, you know, tax cuts and war. I just don't really see what the future of your party is, especially since you guys are coming more homogenous and southern every election. Do you think it... My reading of it is that there's a choice right now, and Republicans are choosing either we lost because we weren't conservative enough, or we lost because we got too conservative. And I'm guessing you think it's because you guys were not conservative.
We weren't that conservative. Under Bush, we weren't that conservative. We expanded government. We weren't for small government, and it's not just Bush to blame. It's when we had control of Congress.
Right, for the majority of his term.
They didn't stand up to him. They didn't say, no, you're not being a representative of our values. You're doing the opposite.
Well, as the party's leader, isn't that by extension their... Like, I don't think that Senate Republicans can be immune from that. Like, where was John Boehner when Dennard Hastert was moving these bills through the House, you know, and no one was saying anything? They were complicit in this. And I would argue that a lot of the growth in government under Bush was military. He had to juke the budget process just to hide the amount of money that he was spending with these appropriations bills. Like, besides No Child Left Behind, I don't really see Bush expanding government that much, at least not in an effective way.
Well, also, he just let spending get out of control.
With
the military and other things, too. Let's be realistic. But, I mean, it was a desertion of the values that make Republicans Republican.
Do you think that that's still a winning argument for getting new people to your party? Because I would argue that you guys, a lot of people left your party or don't really identify with it. So how do you balance being truly conservative, which I guess, would you argue that congressional Republicans now have found their conservative roots and are starting, you know, to grow some cojones back and stand up for conservative values in the Congress?
See, that's a tough question, because I don't know if the conservatives that are in there now, or the Republicans,
because
there are some rhinos, let's...
Really?
Anyway, But anyway, the important thing is, look who we nominated. We nominated John McCain.
Right.
Who was not that conservative. And still is not that conservative.
How about Sarah Palin, eh? I always love that. But, right, he was a moderate. But he was doing well in the election until the economic crash. Some people were projecting him to win prior to the economy crashing. I'm just looking at who you guys have now, and I think the lack of a leader really is a major loss, because you got like Eric Cantor out here, you got John Boehner, who else? Mitch McConnell. You know, it's just like no one really knows, I guess, who to rally around. And right now, I agree, this is a highly media fabricated story, because they often like to do that. But the whole like Rush Limbaugh as leader of the Republican Party right now, it seems to be holding weight, because I don't know what you would classify Rush's politics are. I just think he's an old, angry, drug addict, racist. But besides that, I don't really... Do you think that he represents the conservative party? Is it a good thing that Rush Limbaugh and other, like, talk radio is getting elevated? Or do you think that the focus needs to be more on congressional Republicans and lawmaking? Because, for the most part, they've been a lot more tempered than Limbaugh, because they actually have constituents and they actually have to make compromises in legislation. So, stylistically and... substantively, I guess, which side are you supporting, the Limbaugh or the Republican caucus?
Well, first of all, I don't think Rush is, I don't think he's the real speaker or representative or figurehead of our party. I will say a lot of people identify with a lot of what he says.
Okay, fair.
But I think that a lot of that has to do with A, animosity towards Democrats, and also animosity towards Republicans who have been lacking those cojones you mentioned earlier to actually stand up for the values that they were supposedly elected to represent.
Okay.
Me personally,
right.
I fall short. I fall a bit short of being in Limbaugh's camp, but I'm much further to that side than I am to the congressional Republicans, even though I will say they're starting to revert back. They're starting to come back.
Oh yeah, they're getting a little ballsier. I think a lot of them right now realize that they got to pick a side, because if they don't, the media will make them,
and they will not get reelected.
True, very true. What was I going to say? I was going to say something. Oh yeah, about gaining new members. I'm curious to see what the strategy, I guess, because you know Michael Steele, he's just a disaster. I mean, it's just embarrassing, and I'm not even part of your party, but it's just embarrassing to watch the whole Michael Steele debacle. And I know you guys aren't big on, you know, bureaucracy and party leadership and whatnot, but in terms of gathering new voters, what do you guys, I know you're in the minority right now, so pretty much your role is like the permanent opposition, but what are you guys standing for? Because I noticed Obama, he's offering bold initiatives, like Employee Free Choice Act, Employee Free Choice Act, healthcare reform, the stimulus. And Republicans have been put on the side of arguing against unemployment benefits for laid off workers and, you know, arguing against more affordable healthcare premiums for their constituencies. I just don't see how arguing against benefits for your constituencies in an economic downturn is going to win more people. I mean, like, theoretically, the conservative argument can work in good economic times, but in bad economic times, isn't it, you know, kind of a bad idea to be advocating a government hands-off?
Well, here's the thing. I was going to say something profound, and I forgot. Give me a second.
It's still floating in here somewhere.
I got it back. There it is.
Nice.
Right now, I think to a point, they do have to get themselves out there on bills like the stimulus and healthcare reform and say, we do not agree with this. But don't say we don't agree with unemployment benefits. But you can say that, but you have to say why.
Right.
And they can't just say, don't do that. They have to give a proper justification which would win people over. I know I sound like a broken record. I'm going to say it again. They need to return to the core conservative values of small government and limited spending.
Especially in the economic downturn, when there's we don't really have time to get into this, but you come down strongly on the side that Republicans lost because they stopped being conservative, and the future for your party is being more conservative, basically.
Yes.
Okay. It's just interesting, really, watching stylistically the Republicans, especially this lady, Delegate Susan Allman, who's part of the Maryland state legislature, who talked to us last weekend.
Yeah, I didn't go to that.
It was quite awful, actually, because. She kept
rambling, didn't she?
Yeah, no, she kept asking these leading questions, and then
answering them herself.
No, Stu actually did a very good job answering them. But my favorite was she said, "You know, the stimulus is coming out. It's all this federal money, but you know, guidelines come with that money, and they tell us how to spend it." And I'm sitting there in my chair, like, okay. How disrespectful do I want to be? I decided not to raise my hand just because she's a Republican speaking. There's a majority of Republican people there. But
there was not a majority of Republican people there.
Really? My impression of MSL was a highly conservative body, but
no. Well, when McDaniel gets there, it's definitely not a highly conservative body.
Oh, really? I thought McDaniel were the conservatives, but
most of the McDaniel people there were conservatives.
Right, but that overall McDaniel delegation, I guess. But
there are quite a few Western Democrats. I mean,
Western, right.
California Democrats.
Cali Dems.
No offense to you California Democrats listening.
But basically her argument about, like, a lot of the arguments I'm hearing are just plainly stupid. And I would just hope that, like, you know, we get, like, a good opposition. Because I think two parties aren't enough. And right now it's drifting dangerously close to one party rule for a couple cycles. And I just hope that doesn't happen. So believe it or not, my thoughts go out to you guys. But please dump the Limbaugh. That's not a winning option. He's just not going to help you guys out. He's going to rally the base, but you guys don't have anywhere else to go. What other party are you going to vote for? I think you guys need to go after moderates, but that's just me. But I don't know. Besides that, my soccer team is awesome and better than yours.
Can you see this?
I can, actually. And we won, what's that, the Carling Cup?
I know.
Yeah, it's pretty. With a bunch of subs in, too. A bunch of subs.
For God's sake, you were playing Spurs, and they don't care about the Carling Cup. They care about staying in the Premier League.
True.
Redknapp actually said, I don't care if we win this game.
Right. It was actually a very good game, though. Got down to PKs. I did not expect that. But I think for anyone that wants to try to catch us, UEFA might be the anything. The only tournament I won't talk trash about is the FA Cup, because I have a bad feeling about the FA Cup. I think Sir Alex said it best. He has a feeling that a goal is going to go in off of, like, Nemanja Vidic's backside and, like, into the goal, and Manu's going to lose. Just because, like, winning, you know, 5 titles is so ridiculous. But I think that was to meta as the best soccer team of all time ever.
If I can be fair. Not yet, actually.
Better than Liverpool.
My team still has more league titles and more European Cup titles.
For now.
I'm pretty sure more FA Cup titles, too. Now, if you want to talk in the last 20 years.
No, I want to talk this year. I want to talk this year. Because this year, I'm pretty sure we're going to win the Premier League. UEFA, I guess, is the only outstanding tournament, but. We should throw a watching party for that or something.
Okay.
Or try to get Satanta back. Because when we had Satanta...
You had Satanta here?
Really? Oh, yeah. My first semester here, we had Satanta, and I watched that shit every day. Every day.
Did you get FSC?
No. But they took it away, bastard. I guess, because the rugby team, like, fundrose for it because of the Rugby World Cup was on at that time. But,
You poor diluted bastard. But, I get FSC, Gold TV, Satanta.
Oh, I hate you so much. Oh, my God. Whatever. That's what ESPN 360 is for. I just have to try not to find out the score, which is hard when you get on the internet. But I do what I can. But with that, I guess we'll conclude this episode of Circular Progress. Be on the lookout for some new guests from the McDaniel delegation we talked about earlier. Should be on here soon. I think they're all Republicans, both Stu and Megan. I don't know if Megan is or not. But I'm
pretty sure Megan is. Stu may be more... No, I think he is too.
They're both
in my caucus.
Right, yeah. So it's going to be 3-1, actually. I don't know why I did that, but whatever. It'll happen. So yeah, tune in. It'll get exciting. And with that, we'll leave you. I've been Alex from the left.
Paul from the right. Have a great day.
Spray new to your pets.
Spray.